Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past, our inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune, a fortune compounded of many things. Of the great sea victories of old Ironsides. And the voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. It is the Pony Express speeding news across half a nation. And mighty railroads linking 48 states ever closer. Let us now go back to a significant period in America's history, one which we all share in our inheritance. This is the story of resourceful American colonists who, having been given a liberal government by a generous English king, fought to protect that freedom from the grasping clutches of a later kingly tyrant. It began in 1661, when American colonists were loyal subjects of the English crown. On March 14th of that year, 1661, in the town of Hartford, Connecticut, the General Court, the legislative body of that colony, was in session.
All those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and it is so ordered. Mr. Isaac Knowlton, the chair appoints you chairman of a committee of three to draw up the Connecticut colony's formal message reaffirming our allegiance to our sovereign lord, the King, Charles II of England. Is there any further business to come before the general court?
Mr. Chairman, may I have the floor?
Of course, Mr. Governor Winthrop, of course, sir. Won't you come forward, please, where all may hear you?
Very well, Mr. Chairman.
Gentlemen of the general court, the governor of the colony of Connecticut, Mr. John Winthrop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen, I am not here as chief executive of this colony, presuming to tell the legislative body what it should do. I prefer to consider, rather, that I am appearing before you as a private individual of Connecticut with a somewhat important suggestion.
Aye, what is it?
Well, I would suggest, gentlemen, that along with your pledge of allegiance to our new king, that you also petition for a charter for the colony.
Charter? Why a charter?
Because without one, the position of this colony is most precarious. Our land, our homes, could be taken away from us any day.
Not without due process of law, Governor.
That is the point exactly, gentlemen. None of us has clear title to his land or his home at this time, and we shan't have until King Charles grants us a charter.
But, sir, we bought and paid for our land from the Indians.
I grant you that, sir, and all in good faith. But is your title to that land valid under English law?
Well, it's good enough for my grandfather and for my father. I guess it's good enough for me, sir.
Now, gentlemen, this is no laughing matter. Even the settlers at Saybrook, although they paid £1,600 sterling for a deed of conveyance from the Earl of Warwick, have not a deed which will stand close legal scrutiny.
My father was one who bought the rights of Colonel George Fenwick. That will surely stand up.
I'm afraid not, sir. For when Colonel Fenwick returned to England, he failed to get his patent confirmed or renewed.
You mean we may actually lose our land and our homes?
That is exactly what I mean. Unless we can persuade King Charles to grant a charter to the colony of Connecticut.
How do we get a charter?
We must apply for it.
You mean we just send word we want one?
Well, not quite as simple as that. Someone must present the colony's petition in person.
Well, that will cost money.
Would it not be worth something to be certain that your land, your homes, your property are safe?
Who should we send, sir?
Oh, that's not for me to say. You gentlemen must decide.
If I may interrupt, Governor.
Of course, Mr. Chairman.
Gentlemen of the General Court, may I hear a motion that we send Governor Winthrop at this colony's personal envoy to His Majesty King Charles? There be none better suited in the matter. I need not tell you of his fine legal training, of his outstanding work as our governor.
If I may interrupt the chairman, we've not voted yet on whether to petition for a charter.
The chair stands corrected. Do I hear a motion to apply to His Majesty King Charles for a royal charter for the colony of Connecticut?
I so move.
I second the motion.
It has been moved and seconded that Connecticut apply for a royal charter. Are those in favor signifying by say aye?
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion is carried unanimously.
Now, Mr. Chairman, as you were saying about our governor...
Oh, I think Governor Winthrop is known well to all of us. Else we would not have elected him our governor each year for the last 4 years.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a question of the governor.
Oh, yes? What is it?
How soon should we present our petition to the king?
As soon as possible, sir. The colony of Connecticut cannot rest easy until it has a clear charter from King Charles. His Majesty must outline our boundaries, and the status of our colony must be clearly defined by and in the laws of England.
Do you think the king will grant us a charter?
Who can be certain? But it must never be said that Connecticut lost its place in the world for lack of trying.
What sort of charter have you in mind, Governor Winthrop?
A liberal charter. Perhaps the most liberal of all time. It should follow the principles of the fundamental orders of Connecticut, which, as you will recall, were adopted 22 years ago in this very town.
I don't rightly recall them, Governor.
Well, briefly, sir, they are. First, that the people have the prime right to appoint their own public officers. Second, that the people also have the right to say what the powers and duties shall be of the officers they elect.
But would the king ever grant all that?
Well, perhaps we could persuade him, gentlemen.
How, sir?
Well, gentlemen, the king is a very busy man, as we all know. And I think in order to save His Majesty trouble, we should here and now draft such a charter as we desire. Then all that remains is to have him sign it.
Would you be willing to represent us in London, Governor Winthrop?
Well, it may not be easy, gentlemen.
If anybody can do it, sir, you can.
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll do my best.
Armed with a well-drawn and liberal charter, Governor Winthrop sailed across the Atlantic. His passage was paid with 500 bushels of wheat and 300 bushels of peas. The General Court voted 500 pounds sterling for his expenses. He arrived in London in late 1661 and promptly met Lord Say and Seal, early champion of Connecticut and a good friend of the new king. During the winter, records were studied carefully and papers were prepared to present to the king. Winthrop's fine personality, scholarly bearing, and university education won many friends for the colony. Finally, on April 23rd, 1662, Governor Winthrop was granted an audience with King Charles.
Well, all very interesting, and I suppose quite in order. But tell me, Winthrop, just why does Connecticut want a charter?
Well, if you please, Your Majesty... The Connecticut colony does not know how to define its boundaries or how to maintain them without a royal charter.
Is that the only reason?
By no means, sire. As stated in our petition, part of the land has been purchased at considerable cost. Other parts have been secured by conquest. Further, the land has been improved by much expense and hard labor. Naturally, Your Majesty, we do not wish to lose it.
In reading this charter... I find it would appear to give the colony practically full self-government.
Your Majesty, the charter is based on the fundamental orders of Connecticut. This system is now in existence and has been for 23 years. If Your Majesty will recall, Connecticut has never once caused the slightest trouble for England or for the Crown.
I dare say you're right. But this section here, why, it allows the colony to administer justice without appeal to the throne.
Mm-hmm, true, Your Majesty. In all matters save treason to the crown, Connecticut feels itself well able to define the facts in a case, sir.
Most unusual, Winter. Most unusual. And let me see. Nowhere does the charter say that laws should be transmitted for our inspection. Is that wise?
Well, Your Majesty must be very busy. You should not have to bother yourself with matters of a colony which has proved through the years... that it is devoted and loyal and causes no concern whatever to the crown.
True, I suppose. But this charter, it appears much too liberal. Why, in effect, Winthrop, it grants the colonists of Connecticut every privilege of free and natural subjects within the realm itself.
And why should that not be so, sir? Have not the people of Connecticut proven themselves worthy to be considered free and natural subjects?
Perhaps. Perhaps not. No, Winthrop, you'll have to change the charter before I shall sign it. It's not the policy of England to be so liberal.
It grieves me, sire, that Your Majesty feels that way. Perhaps I have failed to make clear the justice of this charter. Possibly a more fluent man...
That ring, Winthrop, it has a familiar look.
It does, Your Majesty?
Yes, I seem to have seen it somewhere before.
It is possible, sire.
Where did you get it?
From my father. It was a gift, a pledge of friendship to him when he was named governor of Massachusetts Colony.
Who gave it to him?
Your Majesty's father, King Charles I.
Oh, well, a pledge of friendship. So your father and my father were friends.
Very good friends indeed, Your Majesty.
You know, Winthrop, perhaps I was too hasty in judging your petition for a charter. Yes, I think I was.
Then Your Majesty...
Yes. Chamberlain, fetch my quill and ink and the Great Seal of England.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Why didn't you tell me about your father, Winthrop? I do recall now that my father spoke of him many times and always most favorably.
Well, Your Majesty, I thought it best not to impose on friendships of yesteryear.
Oh, nonsense, Winthrop. As you yourself said, a king is a busy man. He should have all the facts as soon and as fully as possible.
The quill, sire, inkwell, and seal.
Oh, yes. Thank you. There, Winthrop. Now the charter is a royal charter.
Thank you, Your Majesty. The colony of Connecticut will ever hold in highest regard His Majesty King Charles II and the royal charter he so graciously has granted them.
And so, without the alteration of a single letter, the charter was signed by a generous king and the royal seal affixed. Great was the rejoicing in Connecticut Colony when the royal charter was received. For it was the most liberal ever granted. For the next quarter of a century, peace reigned, and the colony grew in population and wealth, with civil and religious institutions the freest and best in all New England. But in 1674, the king's brother, the Duke of York, eager for power wherever he could find it, appointed Sir Edmund Andros to be governor of New York. In his lust for power, Andros attempted to claim the colony of Connecticut as part of his domain. Armed with its royal charter, Connecticut defied Andros, and he was forced to give up his plan to annex it. 12 years later, when the Duke of York had ascended to the throne as King James II, his henchman Andros was made royal governor of all New England. No longer were there pleasant and peaceful relations between the colonies and England, for Andros reflected the despotism of a cruel monarch. The first 10 months he spent establishing his authority in 4 New England colonies. December 20th, 1686, Boston, Massachusetts.
I, Sir Edmund Andros, hereby declare the charter of Massachusetts Bay Colony to be forfeited by order of His Gracious Majesty, King James II.
February 27th, 1687, Plymouth Colony.
Plymouth charter is this day revoked.
June 1687, Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
The charter of New Hampshire is forfeit and the territory attached to the Massachusetts Bay Colony.
October 1st, 1687, Newport, Rhode Island.
I herewith dissolve the government of the colony of Rhode Island and order the royal seal of the charter to be broken.
Sir Edmund was now free to turn his attention to Connecticut, the colony which had defied him a dozen years before. In October 1687, Captain Joe Wadsworth of the Connecticut Militia went to confer with Governor Treat in Hartford about the impending threat to Connecticut's liberty.
Come in.
Governor Treat, may I speak to you for a moment?
Of course, Captain Wadsworth. Please sit down.
Thank you. It's about our charter, Governor.
Yes, Captain?
As you probably have heard, Sir Edmund Andros has forced Massachusetts Colony to surrender its charter.
Yes, so I've heard.
And I have just learned that he ordered Governor Clark of Rhode Island to give up that colony's charter, and he proceeded then to break its seal.
And how does that concern us?
It's a warning of what's in store for us.
Now, Captain, I think you're needlessly alarmed. Our charter is such that Sir Edmund would not dare take it from us.
You think not, Governor?
I'm certain of it. It bears the royal seal of King Charles II. Certainly, it is inviolate.
But King James is now on the throne, and he has shown himself unwilling to recognize the grants and acts of those who preceded him.
I think you're being unduly pessimistic, Captain.
Perhaps. But I'd feel a lot better if our charter were hidden in some safe place where Sir Edmund could not get his hands on it. Sir, couldn't it just disappear?
No, Captain, that could not happen. If the charter were to disappear now, Sir Edmund would hold all members of the Assembly responsible, possibly imprison them. As governor of all New England, he has the power to punish as he sees fit.
Endress is becoming a tyrant after the pattern set by the despotic King James.
Careful, Captain Wadsworth. Your words are close to treason.
There'll be none to deny James is a stupid, cold man.
Perhaps. But you must not forget that he is absolute master of England and all her colonies.
He shall not be master of Connecticut.
I wish there were some way to prevent it.
If we can keep our charter, sir, we shall still have our liberty.
Perhaps. But remember that the wishes of Sir Edmund are also those of the king.
Governor Treat, we must not surrender that charter, no matter what are Sir Edmund's wishes.
If he demands it, how can we refuse?
As I said, if it were hidden...
No, Captain Wadsworth. That would be madness. Too many innocent people would suffer if we were to claim it had simply disappeared.
Governor, you know as well as I what Andros plans. He'll force us either to surrender the charter or to resist openly. And I don't fancy Connecticut colony is prepared to war against the might of England.
Captain Wadsworth, you young men are much too glum. I'm sure everything will work out for the best.
I wish I might share your optimism, Governor Treat. What do you plan when Andros appears?
I shall greet him correctly and cordially.
And when he demands the charter?
I shall explain why we cannot surrender it.
Other colonies have sought to reason with him. It didn't work.
I fancy we have a stronger case than did the others.
I hope you're right, Governor.
I'm sure I can handle Sir Edmund if he appears.
In a few days, there was no question whether Sir Edmund Andros would appear. Word reached Hartford that he and a force of 70 British soldiers were on their way to that city. His intention was no secret. He wanted Connecticut's charter, and he intended to have it. On October 31st, 1687, Sir Edmund reached Hartford and lost no time in going to the meeting hall. There, the General Assembly was in session with Governor Treat presiding.
Open! Open these doors!
Found again, Captain. Perhaps Connecticut Assemblymen are deaf.
Yes, Sir Edmund. Who dares interrupt this meeting of the Assembly of Connecticut?
Open up! Open in the name of His Majesty King James of England!
Very well, it shall be as you order.
His Excellency, Sir Edmund Andros.
Oh, good afternoon, Sir Edmund. Won't you join us? What is your pleasure, Sir Edmund?
I shall trouble you to let me have your chair, Governor Treat.
But, Sir Edmund, this is the governor's chair. I am presiding over this assembly as governor of the colony of Connecticut.
You were presiding. I am now.
But what?
Captain, read the king's commission.
Yes, Sir Edmund. James II, by the grace of God, King of England, Scotland, France, and Ireland, hereby commission Sir Edmund Andros, knight, to be captain general and governor of His Majesty's territories and dominions in all New England.
I trust that is clear enough, Governor.
I understand that you are governor of all New England, Sir Edmund. But surely that doesn't mean you intend to replace the governors of the respective colonies.
The king's wishes are clear.
But we are a duly constituted colony with a charter from King Charles II.
Must I remind you that your monarch is now King James?
But our charter...
The charter of this colony is repealed and is to be surrendered to me by command of King James.
But, Sir Edmund, that charter guarantees our ownership of the land we bought from the Indians.
All land belongs to the king. Indian deeds are not worth the scratch of a bear's paw.
I trust you are aware, Sir Edmund. With what great outlay of labor, wealth and blood, the liberties we cherish so dearly have it been achieved.
That is no concern of mine.
There have been terrible wars for the Indians. We've had great difficulties at times protecting our lands from the Dutch.
The charter must be surrendered.
It would be like parting with life itself to have the guarantees of our boundaries and of our security taken from us. Especially hard would it be, since these securities and privileges have been so long enjoyed.
I care not for your sentiments in the matter.
We have petitioned King James that we be permitted to retain our liberty.
His Majesty's answer is no.
Then we may expect to become little more than slaves.
Perhaps.
But why?
It is not in His Majesty's interest that you should thrive.
For hours, Governor Treat argued and pleaded with Sir Edmund Andros. The assemblyman became sullen and dangerous, but the presence of 70 British soldiers made any show of outright resistance foolhardy. As dusk approached, Captain Wadsworth conferred with his friend Nathaniel Stanley in a house near the meeting hall.
Nathaniel, you're sure Andrew Lett and the four others understand this plan?
Of course, Captain Joe.
The meeting must continue until after sundown. It must be quite dark outside, and the candles lighted within the hall.
And you'll be at the north window outside, ready to receive it.
That's right. The signal for our friends to blow out the candles will be Andrew Lett's quoting the words of King Charles.
Where will you hide it, Captain Joe?
That is my private concern. If only one man knows the secret, chances for success are enhanced.
Yes, that's true. But I'm understandably curious.
I know, Nathaniel, but I can't tell you. Now, get the word to Andrew Lett and have the men ready to blow out the lights on the signal.
Right, Captain Joe. And may good fortune attend our venture.
It will, Nathaniel. It must. Our freedom must be preserved.
Oh, enough, enough, gentlemen. This debate has gone on long enough. The hour is late. We can scarcely see. Oh, Captain, see that some candles are provided.
Yes, Sir Edmund, at once.
But you propose to abolish the writ of habeas corpus. You can't do that. The Magna Carta guarantees it.
You must not think that the laws of England follow you to the ends of the earth.
Oh, what?
Now, I demand that you produce the charter.
No, Sir Edmund.
I care to hear no more. You may yield reluctantly, but you must yield to the order of the king.
Very well. Sergeant at arms, bring out the charter. Sir Edmund, if you but knew how much...
The charter. Spread it on the table that I may inspect it properly.
Sir Edmund, may I speak briefly?
Who is this man?
Andrew Lett is my name, sir. I am an old and, I believe, respected member of this assembly. What I have to say will not take long.
Oh, very well, proceed.
Thank you. That charter of the colony of Connecticut is in force at this hour. There has been no judgment rendered against it. It was granted under the Great Seal of England, and therefore cannot be surrendered unless the surrender be given under the seal of this colony. Remember the last words of Charles I. Measures obtained by force cannot endure.
The agreed signal had come, the quotation from King Charles, and the candles were suddenly blown out by the four young patriots.
The lights! Now what's happened to the lights? Somebody strike flint and steel, and be quick about it. That's better. Now, what devilish foolery is this?
Charter. Where's our charter?
So, I've been tricked. I know not how, and I care less. For I shall write Finney to the government of Connecticut under the royal charter.
But, Sir Edmund...
Track of the assembly. You will write in the minute book this statement. At Hartford, His Excellency Sir Edmund Andros, governor of His Majesty's territories in New England, the 31st of October, 1687, took into his hands the government of the colony of Connecticut.
When the candles were blown out, Nathaniel Stanley had snatched the precious charter from the table and passed it through an open window to Captain Wadsworth. Mounted on a fast horse, he raced through the night. No one knew exactly where, but the charter was safely hidden. For the next 17 months, Connecticut and all New England suffered under the tyranny of Andros. But in April of 1689, word came that William of Orange had driven the despotic King James from the throne of England. Andros tried to escape the wrath of the colonists, but he was seized and marched to prison in Boston. Connecticut was now ready to resume government under her precious charter. Governor Treat appealed to whoever had hidden the parchment to produce it. Next day, Captain Joe Wadsworth, in company with Nathaniel Stanley, rode through the Connecticut countryside.
Captain Joe, it's safe enough now to tell me where you hid the charter.
Safe enough, Nathaniel, but I'd like to surprise you.
Well, just give me a hint. Where are we headed?
To the farm of Samuel Willis.
Samuel Willis? You mean you've hidden the charter on his farm?
That's right.
In the Willis farmhouse. But how could you get
it? I didn't say I'd hidden it in his house.
Well, where then?
Anything unusual about the Willis farm?
No, nothing I can think of. There's nothing much there besides the farmhouse. An old oak tree.
Yes, and here we are, Nathaniel. At that old oak tree.
You mean you've hidden the charter among the branches?
Not among the branches. In its hollow trunk. I'll just reach in and see if everything's safe. Ah, here it is, my tunic. And inside... Yes, it's here all right. Connecticut's charter, safe and sound.
Well, I'll...
That old oak tree, hiding place for a charter. I'd never have guessed it.
Nor did anyone else, it would seem.
That old tree. The Charter Oak.
So the General Assembly wrote their new sovereigns, William of Orange and Mary II, that government had been resumed under the old charter until it should learn the king's pleasure. The king's lawyers, headed by Attorney General Summers, considered the case carefully and then ruled...
The charter of Connecticut colony was granted under the Great Seal of England. It was not surrendered under the common seal of the colony, nor was any judgment of record entered against it. The peaceable submission of Connecticut colony to Sir Edmund Andros was merely an illegal suspension of lawful authority. The charter, therefore, remains valid.
The mighty Charter Oak of Connecticut lived nearly 200 years more. When the great tree fell on August 21st, 1856, a guard of honor was posted and the American flag placed upon it. Colt's Band of Hartford played a dirge, and just at sunset, the bells of the city tolled as for the passing of a great man. The Charter Oak and the men who used it in their fight to hold hard-won liberties have an honored place in our inheritance. You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. Here is a special message from the American Legion.
The American Legion, holding its 36th National Convention, is being held in Washington, D.C., was founded in Paris in 1919. Now the largest veterans organization in the world, it has never departed from the lofty principles and ideals originally formulated by those war-weary and homesick members of the AEF, who met that year in the Cirque de Paris at the original founding. The Legion's members today are men and women who have served the cause of freedom in two world wars and in the recent Korean campaign. Legionnaire President Dwight D. Eisenhower is the principal speaker, addressing those assembled in the Washington National Guard Armory for the convention business sessions. Among other prominent leaders bringing messages to the Legion delegates are Veterans Administrator Harvey Higley, His Eminence Francis Cardinal Spellman, newly elected NEA President Warren Walker, labor leaders Walter Reuther and George Meade, and UN Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge. Dedicated for God and country, the American Legion considers problems of community, state, and nation, making recommendations and adopting resolutions based on the democratic process of the group deliberation of its members. This great convention in our nation's capital demonstrates a unique American privilege, freedom of assembly, a part of our inheritance.
Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of history to a time when Americans, dreaming of the future, forged that which we possess today. Today's story, The Charter Oak, was written by Ted Weir and featured Paul Cavanaugh as Charles II, Philip Tong as Governor Winthrop, and Anthony Ustrell as Sir Edmund Andros. Included in the cast in order of their appearance were Ben Wright, James McCallion, Earl Lee, Herb Ellis, Richard Peel, Howard Culver, Jim Nusser, and Jack Haddock. The original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Inheritance is produced and directed for the National Broadcasting Company and the American Legion by Albert McCleary. This is John Lang speaking. This is the NBC Radio Network.